As an entrepreneur, I can relate to the many struggles and achievements that come with the insurmountable learning curves when you're starting a new business. Not to mention the ridiculous amount of self-doubt you constantly try to talk yourself out of when faced with obstacles, along with the incredible highs when you do persist and find solutions. The last 10 years have been an era of rapid digital technological transformation. And this has created a lot of opportunities for people, especially ones who wanted to start home businesses. Now they have the opportunity to serve clients worldwide, and all they need is an internet connection. As a result, this is allowing people from rural communities to compete in the global market and run six-figure businesses from their basement. But how does equity play a part in the lives of new entrepreneurs when it comes to accessing resources that some of us might take for granted? How does colonization affect entrepreneurs who live on an Indigenous reserve? Hi, I'm Kara, and this is Kara Jones Speaks, a show where I like to shed light on the extraordinary. My guest today, Mariah Batiste, is a beadwork designer and owner of Sunday Lace Creations and Bling. She was raised in Unimaki, which is the Mi'kmaq word for Cape Breton, in Nova Scotia, Canada. Her business is rooted in contemporary beaded jewelry for weddings, special occasions, or everyday wear. Mariah's business has received awards and has grown exponentially over the last few years. This past spring, she was the keynote speaker for the 2022 In Business Youth Mentoring Conference at Cape Breton University and Unimaki College. Her presentation was awesome, super funny, insightful, and shocking. Of all of the things she would struggle with when starting her business, Mariah never imagined her biggest battle would be one with Canada Post. Here is our interview.
I like to share this story as my struggle, because when you talk about businesses, you know, I could tell you all my successes, but the struggles are where the meat is. So this is my story about Canada Post. So Canada Post and I have a very co-worker relationship, because without Canada Post, nothing would ship out. And when I began Sunday Lace Creations, I wasn't computer savvy. So I would go with like my 10 to 12 parcels, and I would sit with Thomas George, the postman in Esposoni, for about an hour to an hour and a half every day, filling out the envelopes and taking pictures of everything, and then sending that to my customer, because I didn't know there was an easier way. So finally, I figured out an easier way. The easier way was to type it out online on Canada Post website and then print it up. Then I found an easier way. And then I found that like my sales just kept going up and up and up. And by the time COVID hit, I was doing about 400 parcels a week. And just literally typing in everything was taking up so much of my time. And I had a business coach at the time saying, "Why don't you get a corporate account?" And I said, "Okay, sure, let's do that." But the problem was, Esposoni never had a corporate account, nor did they even have a red box. So I literally had to walk myself into the post office every time I wanted to drop off mail. And they were like grocery bags carrying into the Canada Post and saying like, "Come on, like once COVID hit, they put one person at a time." So I'd be standing 45 minutes in line to drop off mail during COVID. And I was like, this can't work very long. That was like 2019. So I started a fight with Canada Post. And I said, "I need a red box, because if I could just drop it off and put it in a box, then life would be so much easier. And like, I'm already doing all the other work for you guys. I'm typing it up, printing it out. You know, I'm putting it on the packages." I thought like, you know, this would be an easy ask. And when I think back why it's an inequity is, if you think about Esposoni, we're bigger than Christmas Island. We're bigger than Iona. We are bigger than East Bay. But they all had standalone Canada Post buildings and a red box where they would pick up the mail at a red box. So I sent in about 5 complaints, written complaints, online complaints, Twitter complaints. I called customer service about 3 or 4 times. I've done all the things I could do as a single and business person, but they kept saying, there's no need for that in Escasoni. Nobody's asking for it. And I kept saying, I'm asking for it. And if I need it, other people will need it behind me. And so this was the big struggle about that. So in October 20th, I'm missing the most important part. So my brother became an MP, and I started to harass him for a federal issue. And then finally, after the 5th or 6th time, I brought it up. And I brought it up frequently, like, well, where's my red box? I asked for that, and I voted for you, and I'm a constituent. And I was harassing Arnold, telling Arnold, like, where's my red box, Arnold? And then finally, my brother said, listen, people write letters, and we have to act on them. Write a letter. And I was like, how frequently do you want this email? Because I'm in. And so about 4 letters in, I got my red mailbox. I got 2 phone calls from Arnold. So I was able to activate change in Escasoni. But by the time I was able to create that change, I was a corporate seller. They caved because I was relentless. And I was like, I am shipping out 100 packages a week. Your little red box can barely fit 20 of those packages. Like, I need something more. Come pick them up. And I was trying to make a deal with Pete, our mail guy, just be like, just pick them up. Just come over and pick them up. He's like, you have to do, like, I have to listen to what my boss says. So I started calling his boss. And this is how they're like, you have to get a corporate account. And then the corporate didn't want to give Escasoni corporate accounts. And I fought that again. And so they love me at Canada Post. They know my name. But like, that was my struggles with shipping. And so for what I like to tell people about this, when you're starting a business, there's always going to be some fiery hoop that's going to say, you can't do something. And you got to just put it in your mind that you can, or it's possible, anything's possible, and find ways to do it. Because if I took the first no, or the 10th no, then I wouldn't be where I'm at now, where I just like put out my mail and be like, hi, Pete. Bye, Pete. And then my life is so much easier, and time spent is spent running the business, not filling out mailing shipping forms.
We're here at the In Business Conference. And when I heard your presentation, I was really excited. But the thing about your presentation I loved the most was how real you get about everything that goes into, especially starting an online business and doing it starting just before it got real with COVID and everyone, you know. Tell me a little bit about what inspires you to work with young people based on some of the things that you've experienced as an entrepreneur.
So for me, entrepreneurship has been something that sprung upon me. I didn't want to be an entrepreneur. I was making earrings purely out of the craft of it. It was more or less my mental health escape to have something for myself after being sort of pushed into a mother role all day watching Caillou and YTV till I wanted to scream. And then I was like, oh my God, like I need to do something that's me and just for me. And I only got my ears pierced like 5 years prior to starting to make earrings because I was constantly buying earrings. And then I was thinking, you know what, like I can make them for myself, save me some money. It's something for me. It makes me feel pretty, makes me feel connected to my culture in a certain way. And so like it was something that I grew out of myself. And like it was not planning to be a business person. So like to me, like this was a complete passion project. So when I'm thinking about these kids, you know, they might be interested in music or they might be interested in like beadwork like me or, you know, and just to be that example for someone to show them that like from starting from nothing to building this little bead empire that I have, like how it is possible. Because what they see is a lot of the impossible. Like they're told, no, you can't do that so many times. Like if I started my business the way most businesses start,
I couldn't get a commercial space. I couldn't, you know, get Canada Post to ship out my products. So, like, it was a lot of, like, pushback to, like, say, no, you can't do that. And no one's ever done that before. And, like, starting a website on a First Nations reserve was just so foreign to everyone. And there was no mentors to say this was possible. So now that websites are so common and we all have a link tree, we got the TikTok, we all could be influencers and make that money in different ways. I just want to promote to them that it is possible. And until they see someone like myself going up and saying, I did it, here's all the struggles, you're going to have your own different struggles, like, this is what I want to teach you, and just give them the knowledge and sort of like the, you know, cheerleading them to say, like, you also could do this.
One of the things that you talked about was the struggle that you went through with Canada Post. And people don't think about, you know, that equity experience of something that they take for granted as like a red box for Canada Post. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about why you think that story is so important, not just for youth, but everybody, because they just might not think about it?
So the equity issue with Canada Post is, in Eskasoni, we had a building that was inside of the First Nations band office. And we didn't have a standalone building. We had one staff member there who did everything. And we have a very large population. And so this created some real equity issues when I started a business. I was the first to be officially, like, running a website and shipping out. And nobody knew this process. Nobody knew, like, that this, like, that the volume would have increased the way it did. Like, he was just struggling along, having the best day until I showed up. And then it would be an hour of helping me fill out forms. And those are just, like, creating express post mail outs and making sure I got everyone's tracking number and doing it all manually by hand. So, like, this was so... Back in the day when I first started, it was just like writing out on envelopes and then putting my beadwork in those envelopes and shipping them out. The equity issue is, like, they didn't have an official building. Now, if you look at the map, Eskasoni has about 4,000 residents. There's residents in different area around Cape Breton in rural places. They all have standalone buildings. They all had a red box. They all had staff that were staffed. Multiple people were staffed. And there was not this barrier that I had experienced with Canada Post. So as I started to fight for, sort of like saying, couldn't this be easier? Like, why is this so hard? Like, how do, like, you know, Amazon do it? Or how does, like, you know, other website people do it? And then I started to see the inequities of living on a First Nations reserve. And, like, that was, to me, an injustice. And I was saying to myself, like, how do I fix this? So for me, I, like, complained to the point where I got what I wanted. But it took so many no's before I got a yes. And by the time the yes actually arrived on my First Nations reserve with a red box, which showed me that there was a red box in Christmas Island, there was a red box in Iona, there's a red box all around me in different places, but not specifically in Eskasoni, which is, like, it seemed so small at the time, but at the same time, it would have made such a huge difference in my business. And as you will hear from, you know, whatever is edited in about my story, is like how that little box showed me there was an inequity within our community, but we didn't get the same services as everybody else, and that we were entitled to that. And so then I took it to the government, and the federal government had to listen to me about pointing out this inequity, saying, like, you put us on First Nations Reserve, you're offering this federal service to everyone. Why is it that First Nations people are not getting, like, the same rights as our neighboring communities? And they have less people. And it just didn't feel right. So I fought for that. And I feel like that is one of my biggest, you know, struggle points, that I was able to, like, fight for this for my people, but also just to fight to bring it to everyone's attention, because, like, this is not just me. Eskasoni is absolutely just the largest First Nations community, but there's places like Bulodek that doesn't have a red box. So the fight doesn't stop with me. So now that I bring it to their attention, they're now thinking about bringing it up and saying, why don't we have that? Because why would you drive 20 minutes out of town to drop off mail? It just makes no sense. And just because we're First Nations communities, shouldn't be that inequity. If that's offered across Canada, it should be offered on First Nations reserves as well.
Mariah, that's no joke. Like, okay, so I'm from Anakinish. With the students there, it's a little over 5,000. Without the students, it's around 4. There's a red box around every corner in our communities. So putting that into perspective,
yeah,
right? People would never think that that's something that you wouldn't get in a community that large, or even in a small community. I mean, outside of Anakinish, there's, you know, Harbor Bushe, or there's Pumpkin or things, and you see red boxes, you're like, yeah, okay, that's normal.
Yeah.
Right? And it also speaks to me about not only, I mean, people talk about the barriers between, you know, women and equal pay. And then you add in BIPOC people and equal pay. And then, you know, you look at the barriers that are seem so simple, but mm-hmm. that took you so much extra time that you could have been beating and making money.
Yes, absolutely.
Just to have a box.
Yes.
Like, people don't realize. And this is part of those 94 calls to action. They're not just things that organizations are supposed to do, or you know, it's something we all need to acknowledge, our privileges. You were talking a little bit about what is happening in First Nation communities in regards to the boxes, but also around allyship.
So the thing about the red box is a symbolism of systemic racism. The systemic racism of the corporation of Canada Post did not see the need that Eskasoni would have to have more than a letter slot, which is like 18 millimeters, and that's all you can slip in. My earrings are much bigger than that. So for beadwork, you know, I have to put it into, like, you know, the red box, or take it into the mailings or the Canada Post building, which we didn't have. So there was like all these inequities that I kept seeing as running a business, as being the first one to run a business, and that this red box was symbolism of, like, they didn't respect, or they didn't really see us as a booming economy, that the crafting market could not be a booming economy because they didn't build the system to accommodate us. But they would accommodate, you know, all these small towns around us, say in Iona or Christmas Island. And, like, why are they granted more privileges than us? And that's where I sort of, that was what the soapbox I stood on for 2-3 years while I tried to get this red box. And saying, like, why is this one symbol of, like, inequity the thing I'm going to, like, die on? Like, but it was something that I felt like, this is not just for me. This is for, you know, the Arbonne ladies, the Mary Kays, the multi-marketing people who are doing the same thing as I am. And, like, they can do so much more. Even though nobody clapped for me when that box showed up, nobody even thought it was a great idea. But, like, I can see now it being used. I see people, like, it's just a symbolism of change and accepting of our, like, growth and our future economy. And these kids are going to know about it now. So to me, I'm, like, inspired because, like, through online shopping, you're reaching the entire world. These kids only know to sell, like, cupcakes to their friends and family. They only know they could sell T-shirts to the people at powwows. They don't think big, and nor did I. I never thought, like, my earrings would be shipped out to London. I never targeted that audience. So to me, like, you know, it reaches the world to us. And so through online markets and through, like, social media and TikTok, we're going much farther than our feet could ever take us. And that's where I feel really inspired with the in business, because they're going to see me running an online business and reaching the world, and they can feel inspired to do the same.
When you were here today at In Business, what are some of the things that excite you about seeing the next generation of entrepreneurs?
The things that really excite me is the potential. Like, for me, even as a business owner, like, it took me a lot of bravery to move forward and to just say, I'm going to quit this high-paying job. I'm going to stay home and be with my nephew. I'm just going to take a year off. And then the year turned into 2 to 3. And then, like, coming from a place where I was on welfare and just like depending on the small amount of money to live and thinking like, how can I just survive so that like I could go back and get that job and depend on a paycheck, but I want to live a different type of life. And so now that I have crafted this life for myself of being a business owner and running a business and hiring people now, and like it just is such such a different mindset that like I want to show these kids like it's possible that like if something doesn't work out, you can always pivot and change. And just like, you know, you can, I started in pre-med, then I went to English, then I went to women and gender studies, and I got a degree in English and women's studies, then I went into medicine. Like the amount of times that I've decided to change my mind and pivot to make my life to be whatever it is that I chose it to be at the time is, I want to show them it's, you don't just pick one when you're 18 and you're done. And I want to show them that, like, if they invest 10 years in getting a master's in medicine like I did, you can still decide to run a craft store like Michael's in your 30s and 40s and be totally successful at that too. So, like, and, you know, if you're a mother, it's okay to take time off and have a huge gap in your employment, because it works out kind of in the end for some people like myself, because then I was able to adapt. And I, like, that's the thing I want them to know is, like, you're not pigeonholed when you decide right now what you want to do. Because if you talk to anyone, life just throws you circumstances and you just keep changing. So for me, I just find these kids are so inspiring. The amount of potential they have, the excitement, the energy, their whole future's ahead of them. So that makes me kind of inspired as well. I like sort of a dual energy of, they admire me, I admire them back. So it's just so fantastic, the synergy there.
If you'd like to learn more about Mariah and her business, Sunday Lace Creations and Bling, I've included all of her information in our show notes. Don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss out on any more stories where I continue to shed light on the extraordinary.